You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast. We talk everything fitness, nutrition and mindset to help you with your goals. Today's episode is going to be a Q&A. So this is my last episode before I fly out to Morocco to do a 256 kilometer run to the Sahara Desert. I'm flying out on Thursday. So next week's episode is going to be a pre-recorded episode that we've done. So you'll be able to follow my journey out there on Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness, my Snapchat, BrianK019 to a degree. And I'm going to be trying to put as much as I can, even though I'm going to be off the radar for, I think, 5 or 6 days. But I will be putting on my stories, all the check-ins with Morocco, the start of the race until I lose internet coverage. So if you want to see how I'm getting on in the Sahara Desert in Morocco for the 256-kilometer self-sufficient race through the desert, be sure to check out my Snapchat or be sure to check out my Instagram stories from Thursday onwards. Today's episode is going to be a Q&A, and the episode we're recording for Monday while I'll be in the middle of the race is also going to be a Q&A. We're going to do them both together. So today's episode, questions come in from Snapchat and came in from Instagram, and we're going to kick it off with today's first one. So first question comes in from Instagram. I started paying attention to my food and health relatively recently, but my girlfriend still doesn't. How would you recommend to handle this kind of situation? She doesn't really want to change, but I think it would be better for her. So there's a lot of people listening, and I can understand and resonate with this particular question because I've had a couple of circumstances in my life when I've made certain life changes, and then you start to notice it in other people that you care about, life, your family members, your partners, your boyfriends, your girlfriends, your husbands, your wives, your, you know, brothers, sisters, your mother, fathers in some cases, and you start to see the life choices other people are making, and you feel that your way of living may be better suited for them and better able to support them or whatever it is that they want to achieve. The one piece of advice I'll offer before I go down any rabbit hole with this is realizing that the life choices you've made, particularly if they're relatively recent, your life choices are your life choices. The way you decide to eat and the way you decide to live your life is very much down to your choice. And you trying to convince other people to live a certain way may not be the best way to approach it, even if you think it's going to be beneficial for them, for one of two reasons. One is you have relatively recently made the change, which means there's a little bit of a recency bias, which means it's a cognitive bias in our brain, one of our automatic system ones that I'll talk about later on in today's episode. You have a recency bias that the thing that you're doing right now is the most important thing to you. We've all got this in different areas of our life. I've done it in many areas in terms of nutrition, training, lifestyle in general. The thing that we are most passionate about at this moment in time becomes the thing that we feel the most strongly about. So when you start a new vegan lifestyle, or when you start a new nutritional flexible dieting lifestyle, or when you start CrossFit, or when you start bodybuilding, or when you start competing, or whatever it is, whatever is most recent to you is in the forefront of your mind, is the thing you're normally most passionate about at this moment in time. Understanding that other people may not necessarily share that passion right now can go a long way towards allowing you to stay on track with the thing that you're trying to achieve and not annoy other people in the process. What can happen, and I've done this particularly in the past, when I started eating healthier first, and when I really started to get seriously into training and the way that I ate around 19-20, when I really started to focus on trying to eat better foods, even though I'd always trained, I'd played sport all my life, when I really made that switch to food, what happens is you start noticing it in other people who are eating things like pizza or McDonald's or just poor food choices in your opinion, and you think that your way is the best. And I'm speaking from personal experience. There was a time, and ironically there was a time when I knew significantly less than I do now, when I would preach my ideas about nutrition onto people and tell them, well, look, you shouldn't be eating that because it's bad for you, or you shouldn't be eating that because, you know, there's trans fatty acids or whatever it is for fast food that people may have been consuming. Now, I probably have a lot more knowledge on all of the areas of nutrition, particularly things like trans fatty acids, hydrogenated oils, you know, this misconception on saturated fat and its ability to raise your bad cholesterol when it's not combined with things like sugar. All of these areas that I've improved my own knowledge on, what happens is when you start to understand what works best for you and you're not as reliant on that recency bias of the new changes that you've made, you tend to not point it out in front of other people. One of the things that used to bother me at one stage was I used to have friends, particularly circles of friends, I'm not so much that I hang around with anymore, but when I first started competing in bodybuilding, when I first started really getting strict on timing my macros and trying to get my body fat down to that fitness model level, where you know you're sub 6% body fat, I would have friends who weren't into that lifestyle that were afraid to go places for food with me because they were afraid I was going to judge them for what I was eating, for what they were choosing to eat. And I used to have that issue with girls I would go on dates with. If they weren't into a fitness lifestyle, they're like, well, we're not going to a restaurant. You'll be judging what I'm eating. And it's funny because now I have no opinion on what other people choose to put into their body unless they ask me. Unless it's someone I'm working directly with, that's obviously what I'm for, people that I'm coaching and coming through my programs, I'm working directly trying to improve and the food choices and make it work in alignment with each person's goals. But people in my personal life or people that aren't coming through my program that don't ask my opinion on what foods they should eat, I never offer it. Because when you're not as attached to the way someone else should live their life, then it allows you to be a lot more objective if you are asked and you are asked for your opinion on what they should do. What can happen in this context is when you start making that recent health change or nutritional change or fitness change in your lifestyle, and we've all seen our friend, or you may have been this person, I surely was myself, where they switch into a fitness lifestyle and then all their Instagram posts or all their social media posts are about the fit life, about the grind, or about the, you know, the memes that are cheat day. All of these things, and I've done it from personal experience. I lived that lifestyle and I became that person for a period of time. When it's your recency and it's the thing you're most passionate about right now, you forget other people don't share that. And it's very, very important that you don't isolate the people around you, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your husband, your wife, your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, whoever it is that you think would benefit from living their life a different way. When you start to get preachy, and nobody wants to be preached at, regardless of what it is, and one of the reasons that certain things like veganism to a degree has such a strong hold on certain people in terms of opinion is it can be very, very preachy. CrossFit's very, very similar. One of the reasons that I love the Happy Pair so much, who are on the podcast at the end of this month, is they completely broke down those barriers of veganism and showed that, look, you may feel better, try out some of our recipes, you'll do great with it, and you know, a vegan's for you, by all means live that lifestyle, but they're not ramming it down your throat. And the jokes in social media and fitness tend to be with vegan and CrossFit. There's an old joke that if you meet a vegan CrossFitter, what do they tell you about first? And that can be what happened. And that's not a dig at CrossFit. That's not a dig at veganism. That's a dig at people's personalities of recency bias when they decide that this is what they're all about and this is how they're going to live their life. And they become very dogmatic on their approach that this is how everyone should live their life. That's not necessarily true. Just because you believe that this is the best thing for you doesn't mean that the entire world believes that. I've got my certain beliefs that I hold for my nutritional strategies. I like people coming through my program to use real food. Use a lot of whole foods, fruits, lots of vegetables, quality meats, and get it factored in so we can increase energy levels so training output is better and mood is better throughout the day. That may not necessarily be the best way for each person. I have other people who come through my program that drink cans of Monster and eat 2 protein bars every day because that's what works best for them and they're happier because of that. So there is no one size fits all, and it's very important to realize that just because you've made that change now, you run the risk of really annoying the people in your life if you start preaching at them. I've spoken in the podcast before that trying to change somebody's opinion or trying to change somebody's mind who's not ready to change their mind is like trying to teach a pig to fly. Two things happen. One, the pig doesn't learn how to fly, and two, you just annoy the pig. So what I would advise is just because you're living your life that way, be the change you want to see. The old Gandhi quote that when you are living a certain way and you are making food choices and people can see that your energy levels have improved, your body composition has changed, they will ask you and then they'll start asking for your opinion and they'll ask for your advice. If you start preaching with it, people will bring on a defense mechanism and they'll shut it down instantly. So you'll end up being in a worse off position than if you had just lived your life the way you wanted to do it, make the food and health choices, and then as the people in your life start to see your changes and they decide that they want to live that way, you're there for them and you can offer an opinion. Otherwise, you do run the risk of isolating the people that are closest to you right now. And again, I get it myself. I did the same thing, particularly when I made changes in my early 20s, mid-20s, and it's only something in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years that I've really come to terms with, that my way of thinking isn't necessarily, or my belief systems that I use aren't necessarily the best way everyone should live their life. The reason they work for me is because I hold the beliefs and they work for me. The reason they may not work for somebody else is because they've got a completely different belief system. They want to live their life a different way, and there's nothing wrong with that. The same way as you don't want them to be pushing their unhealthy habits or their unhealthy food choices onto you, it's the exact same in reverse. So just keep that in mind, and hopefully by you living your life and making healthier food choices, the people around your network, I always say, are the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. If you are living your life and you are becoming a better version of you because of the choices you're making, there's a good chance that the people around you are going to want to make similar choices, and then you can offer an opinion and then you can help them. And that's probably how I would handle the situation, regardless of who it is in your family or boyfriend or girlfriend or whoever it is that you are trying to change. Be the change you want to see, and then hopefully that will help. Okay, next question comes in from Snapchat. What's the best way to grow my legs? So this is a question I can answer a couple of different angles on. From somebody who has genetically weak legs in terms of body composition, when I've spoken in the podcast in the past about the only body part, particularly not so much in the last 2 years, but particularly in my mid-20s, the body part that I used to take a lot of pride when people complimented was my legs, because they're not genetically strong. And things like when I was 25, 26, if people complimented my arms and my shoulders, I never really took that compliment to heart, because I don't have to do anything for arms or shoulders. I grew up on a farm lugging shit around, you know, from the age of 7 until 16, 17, and I had arms and shoulders, and they need very little stimulation in order to hold their size. But my legs were the complete opposite. I had to absolutely grind to grow my legs. I still have to hammer them in workouts to keep their size and keep their shape. So there's a couple of tips and tricks that I'm going to share in the hopes that they help. But it's a body part that I probably tried everything on, and one of the reasons that I'm able to offer so much different angles on what can work well is because I had to try. There wasn't a pill, there wasn't a supplement, there wasn't a food, there wasn't anything that you could take to just grow your legs. It was literally trial and error for probably about 14 years of training until I found what worked. So I'll offer a few and I'll share a few in the hopes that they help, regardless of what it is you're trying to achieve with your legs, whether it's a guy trying to get them bigger, whether you're an athlete just trying to get them, you know, stronger with more power, or whether you're a girl trying to tone them up. There's a lot of principles here that will cross over, that once you've changed your nutrition around it, can all apply to grow your legs or shape them so that they have a better body composition. So number one is, the first thing to always try with legs is going to be your standard hypertrophy parameters, your 8 to 10 reps, your 3 to 4 sets, your 60 to 90 seconds rest. That's always going to be optimum for most body parts. That being said, my legs never responded to that body, to that parameter, or to that rep range. What I always found with my legs was I had to go high volume for them to change, or for the composition of that muscle to change. So I never do anything less than 20 reps on legs. And normally I'll go higher. I'll go up to the 30, 40, and even 50. Some of you have seen my DTP, the Dramatic Transformation Principle, which is a pyramid of 50 reps circling down or cycling down to 10 and going back up to 50. I regularly put it on my Instagram if I'm doing legs, particularly for Marathon de Sable. I've been doing a lot of high volume on legs, trying to build my endurance for the desert. And that same strategy worked really, really well when I was trying to grow my legs as long as I was eating enough calories to support that growth. At the end of the day, your training program and your nutrition should always be in alignment. I'm doing a very, very similar training strategy right now for my legs, but instead of them growing, they're just getting way more muscular endurance because I need them to go through the Sahara because I'm not eating the same amount of calories for them to grow. But that training system, that high pyramid, high volume, when I was eating 3,000-4,000 calories and getting enough protein and cycling my carbs, I was able to grow a lot of muscle in my legs doing that. So just the system works in lots of different ways, and then your nutrition's obviously going to fuel whatever it is you're trying to achieve. So the one thing that I would offer is if you've tried the standard 8-10 rep range and your legs still aren't responding to that, try going high volume. One of two things tends to happen when you go super high volume with legs. One, you end up creating an incredible amount of tension on the muscle because the volume is so high, you don't actually have to use that much weight, so you don't run the risk of lower back injuries and different injuries that can come from going too heavy on, say, squats, so because your weight is a lot lower because your reps are higher. And you can also build your mind-muscle connection, which basically means that you can connect your mind to the muscle. I spoke about that in the training section of my book, The Fitness Mindset, that when you're connecting your mind-muscle, you're able to feel your legs for every single rep that you're moving the weight. So when you can do that, you're able to make sure that your secondary movers aren't kicking in. So for example, if I'm doing a barbell squat, I can get my quads to take that entire movement. And even if I'm working in a lower rep range, 8-10 rep range, I can squeeze through my quads for every one of those reps. And that allows me to stimulate more fiber tears. And again, once my nutrition is good or your nutrition is good, you're going to be able to build more muscle in your legs as a result. So the number one thing I would offer is if you're not responding to the hypertrophy range, try upping your volume even to 20 reps. You can go higher, you know, you can go up to 50 reps like I do sometimes, but try going higher. I read in Arnold Schwarzenegger's book, The Modern Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding, that he never did less than 20 reps on legs because they didn't grow if he did. And that's where the idea came for me 5-6 years ago. So that's number one tip. Number two is when you go that level of volume and rep, you're going to do one of two things. You're going to create that amount of tension on the muscle, tear those fibers down, and then repair them in nutrition so they grow bigger and potentially improve your mind-muscle connection so that when you do go back doing a normal 8-10 rep range on a barbell squat or a leg press, you're going to be able to squeeze your quads and squeeze your legs better, knowing that you are actually moving the weight with the muscle that you're trying to add resistance to and not move it through your lower back or not move it through your glutes if you're trying to quad squat. And then understanding that your legs are composed of your quads and your hamstrings. So one of the mistakes people can make is when you're trying to grow your legs, we think of just doing leg extensions or just doing leg presses where we're focused on our quads. To really grow your legs in size and shape, you probably want to hit them with hamstrings as well. Now, I do a significantly less amount of hamstring work because of the amount of conditioning work I do with, say, the metabolic conditioning for my GA Lean Body program, which is a program I still follow from time to time, where I'll take out the best bits of that advanced program. And I'm getting a lot of fast twitch hamstring work from that, from different box jumps and different pop-up movements. So I don't do a lot of direct hamstring work myself anymore, but something that can be beneficial is building some of that hamstring work directly in, understanding that your legs aren't just made up of your quads, they're made up of your hamstring as well. So if you're trying to grow them, make sure you're building your compound lifts into your actual leg day, your squats, whatever variation you're doing, front or back squat or barbell box squat. You may be doing some version of a leg press, you may be doing some version of a leg extension, and then your hamstrings, your deadlifts, your stiff-legged deadlifts, or your hamstring curl, either lying or sitting. All of those movement patterns are very, very good for growing your legs. So building those into your program and then prioritizing that with maybe going a little bit higher on volume if you need to, and then making sure your nutrition is good and you're getting enough calories and getting enough protein and cycling your carbs if you need to, so you're replenishing glycogen at the end of workouts, particularly legs, which can be very, very intense, can all help you grow your legs. So they're just a couple of tips. Again, people coming through my program, I tend to change it up depending on past experience, depending on what hasn't worked or what has worked in the past, and then doubling down on what's worked and cutting what hasn't. So there is no one size fits all. If there was, everybody would do that and their legs would grow. So try a couple of those tips and tricks, try those exercises, focus on your compounds, focus on your hypertrophy or higher volume, and hopefully that will help you grow your legs. And the same will apply if you're trying to tone them up or just change the shape. The only difference is your nutrition nutrition won't be as high in calories. You will have a different intake in your macros, and your body will change as a result. So the same principles apply whether you're trying to grow them, whether you're trying to tone them up, or whether you're just trying to change the shape. It's your nutrition that will change around them. So by all means, try those out, and hopefully they help massively. Okay, next question comes in from Instagram. Will training fasted with BCAAs in the morning help me burn more fat? So there's two angles I can come at this question, because the short answer is not directly, but the long answer is potentially if all other factors are in place. So I'm going to flesh that out. The training fasted in the morning, a lot of the most recent studies will show that it really doesn't matter when you do your cardio, as long as you're in deficit and as long as you're getting your cardiovascular workouts done, whether that's low intensity or high intensity, that it doesn't really matter whether you do it fasted or not. Anecdotal experience, so from personal experience, I always found that I lost body fat faster when I trained fasted in the morning, particularly if I did my fasted cardio. But I was also doing a split where I would do fasted cardio in the morning and then I would do my weights in the evening. So I was potentially losing body fat faster as a result of having a higher output at two different times of the day because it was split up through meals, as opposed to just training with weights and then doing fasted cardio at the end of the weight session. So again, I don't know if it was a causal or correlation. So I don't know if it caused it or was actually correlated. But in terms of training fasted in the morning, trying to lose body fat, BCAAs aren't going to speed it up directly. So in the context of losing body fat and supplements that are going to help you lose body fat, they need to do one of a few things. One is they'll increase lipolysis, which means that they'll help you release fat from the cells so that you can burn through it as a fuel source. Caffeine's a great example of this. Another thing that they can do is elevate your metabolism. So means that you will burn more calories throughout the day. Green tea extract is a great example of this. And then the other example is they'll actually take fat cells from the mitochondria and push it into your cells to use it as a fuel source, so that you're actually going to be able to release it as a fat fuel source, similar to caffeine, just in a more mitochondrial fashion. So L-carnitine tartrate is a really good example of that. So there's a couple of different supplement angles that will help you lose body fat faster or help you burn body fat faster. BCAAs don't directly do any of that. But what they do is they can improve your training output while you're actually working out if you're training in a fasted state. So for example, first thing in the morning, if you're fasted and you don't have a lot of energy, the first thing that's going to suffer is the quality of your workout. Because if you don't have food, you don't have energy in your body, you're not going to be able to get a hit and you're not going to have a good training session, potentially. So what BCAAs can do is they'll give your body a fuel source so that you can actually burn through the branched chain amino acids, the leucine, the isoleucine, the valine during your workout so that it doesn't suffer an intensity. The better your workout is, the better your results are going to be. The more fibers you tear and you repair them back with everything in your nutrition and your recovery, the faster you're going to change the composition of the muscle and the way your body looks. The other thing to consider is the reason branched chain amino acids work so well, particularly in a fasted state in the morning, is they can help you preserve the muscle you have. So the real benefit of branched chains in general is their preservation of the muscle that you currently have. There are some arguments that the leucine, being the most anabolic of all amino acids, can potentially help you build more muscle as well. And in a calorie surplus, you can definitely do that. And studies have been shown to do that. But where BCAAs really hold their own is in preservation of muscle. So holding the muscle you have. And the reason that this is so beneficial is the more muscle your body has, the faster your metabolism will be. So the more muscle your body has, the more calories you will burn throughout the day. And branched chain amino acids can help you preserve that. Some people in a calorie deficit and in their training fast in the morning, your body can actually use your muscle to use it as a fuel source, which means that you can eat into the muscle you have. It's probably been exaggerated in terms of bodybuilders and fitness people and people online that you'll lose your muscle if you miss this window or whatever example has been given, or if you don't have your BCAAs or you don't have your whey protein, you're going to miss your anabolic window and you'll start eating into muscle. And by all means, there's probably some truth to that. If you're not refueling properly, it's probably, again, highly exaggerated, but branched chain amino acids will hedge against this bet. So I'm a fan of branched-chain amino acids. I have a lot of my athletes use it, my GEA players. I've got people in my BKF online program, so the people that are prioritizing losing body fat that don't play sport, a lot of them will use branched-chain amino acids as well. But they really come into their own, in my opinion, when someone is training fasted for the reasons I've just mentioned. The truth is, you're going to get branched-chain amino acids in a lot of complete protein sources you're eating. So if you're eating chicken, turkey, beef, you're going to get your branched-chain amino acids in there. The reason that they work so well is because they are very readily available and used by the body, and you can get them very easily in supplement form to take while you're training. But again, provided that you have enough branched-chain amino acids in your nutrition in general, your ability to burn body fat and lose weight, or burn body fat and reduce the actual fat in your body, losing weight is the number on a scale, losing body fat is losing the fat in your body, is going to be down to your overall nutrition, your calories in, your calories out, and your different macro timings. The same as building muscle is going to be your overall nutrition, your calories in, calories out, and your different macro timing. But branched-chain amino acids can definitely speed up your body's ability to burn more fat by having a higher training output, by being able to use it as a fuel source, or potentially preserving the muscle that you have so that you can keep your metabolism elevated and you don't start eating into your muscle, which could potentially slow down your metabolism. So firsthand, does it burn body fat? No, it doesn't increase lipolysis. It doesn't really increase your metabolism directly. And it doesn't really have any effect in that sense. But from a secondary hedging your bet point of view, it can improve your training if you're training fasted, and it could potentially preserve your muscle, which could potentially allow you to keep your metabolism high, which means you'll burn more calories throughout the day. So I have a lot of my people coming through my programs who are using supplements. Not everyone uses supplements. Some people get amazing results without them, but a lot of the ones that I will add in are people who train fasted in the morning. Sometimes we'll add in some caffeine or some MCT oil as well, but having branched-chain amino acids to sip on to preserve that muscle or to use it as an energy source, that's where I really think branched-chains come into their own. I think different times of the day, depending on being in a calorie surplus and calorie deficit and the different nutritional foods you're eating, you may be getting enough branched-chain amino acids in your diet alone, so you may not need to supplement with them. Again, that's case dependent, depends on each person, but in my opinion, I love training with branched-chain amino acids first thing in the morning. And personally, from anecdotal experience, I would never step foot in a gym training fasted myself without branched-chain amino acids, or without leucine, which is the main ingredient in branched-chain amino acids. It's the main component of BCAAs. I personally wouldn't step foot in the gym and train without it. Again, context is key. If you're in doing a strength program where you've got long rest periods, probably won't need as much. But if you're doing a lot of tension work or hypertrophy or conditioning work, probably going to support you. So again, context is key. But that is how I would look at it in terms of burning body fat and training fasted with branched-chain amino acids in the morning. Okay, next question comes in from Snapchat. I'm 29, all my friends are on about settling down and getting houses. I want to travel though, what should I do? So, without more context on this question, I did a video early last year, very, very similar, about somebody who came back from traveling and all their friends had settled down and they were feeling very isolated because they had all these amazing experiences and their friends, it was a girl that had came back, all her friends she had gone to school with and gone to college with had now settled down, got houses, were having kids, and she felt very, very isolated. This is not completely dissimilar in terms of what somebody should do. So the first thing I would offer here is anytime you make choices based off societal pressures or what you think you should do or what your family think you should do or what society thinks you should do, you're asking for a lot of internal dialogue that is going to go back and forth on what you should do, and for the lack of a better phrase, can just wreck your soul. And what I would offer here is, I love the Seneca quote, who was a Roman philosopher over 2,000 years ago, that when you live in accordance with nature, you'll always be happy. And when you live in accordance with others, you'll never be happy. And that's kind of how I feel about certain questions like this, that because we live in a culture and we live in the Western world where, you know, people will say that, well, you're 30 now, you should have a, you know, a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and you should have a house, and you should start thinking about kids, you should have a job and settle down. That may not be where your internal compass is pointing. You may not be meant for that path. And by all means, the people that are in that lifestyle where they've got their boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, their kids are on the way, or they have a couple of kids and they have a house, they have a job and they're climbing the ladder against the right wall and they're happy with what they're doing, that's amazing for them. And if you're that person, keep doing that. But that may not be your calling. That may not be your path. If you want to go traveling, I make a lot of my life choices off the 97-year-old rule. I try, and which is kind of a Stoic philosophy, where you go into the future and you look back on what would you regret more. And I do this regularly. Still, when I'm making business decisions or life decisions or relationship decisions or whatever decisions I have to make in my life, I use the 97-year-old rule. I ask myself, okay, if I was my 97-year-old self lying on my deathbed, what decision or what choice would I regret, or what one would I be happy to do? And when you're able to do that, it makes your decisions a lot clearer, and it gives you a lot more clarity, because one, you remove yourself from it and you tend to be a little bit more objective. What can happen is when we're involved in a situation and it's our life and it's our family and it's our friends, and we're being told one side that, you know, we should settle down, we should get a job, get a house, you know, find a relationship, and we're hearing this in one side, but we're getting this internal dialogue telling us, look, I want to go traveling, I want to go do something else. What can happen is you're too attached to the situation. And Buddha says that suffering comes from attachment. And in this context or this situation, the attachment to an idea of how you should live your life can make you absolutely fucking miserable. So what I would do is that 97-year-old rule allows you to be a little bit more objective, because it makes you fast forward into the future and then look back, what would you regret more? One of the thought experiments that I would apply here is fast forward on any decision that you're trying to make right now. And for those of you listening, that may not be to go traveling. It may be to quit your job and start something new. It may be to leave a relationship that you're miserable in and start something new, or start something fresh that you're afraid to do. And when you make decisions out of that 97-year-old rule, you tend to not be so attached to the actual situation and what's going on right now. And the thought experiment that I would apply is pull yourself into that position and ask yourself that question honestly. What would you regret more? In this context, you're 29 and you want to go traveling. What would you regret more? Not having that experience and going traveling the world now while you still can? Or if you went and lived out that, right, I'm going to stay here now with my friends, I'm going to try and settle down and get a house and start climbing my ladder of whatever career I want to do, which would you look back and regret more? The other thing I would offer on this is a life philosophy that I live by, and that's when you have a choice between A or B and you can do both, always do both. One of the stories, and we are our stories, and I spoke about this in an earlier podcast, the five stories that may be holding you back, which is one of my most downloaded episodes. One of the stories that you may be telling yourself right now is that I have to choose one or the other right now. And the truth is, from the outside, and I'm super objective because I have no attachment to any of this, and it's probably one of the reasons that I'm able to offer an objective opinion that may support and hopefully will support you, is you could do both. You can, just because your friends are settling down now and getting houses and having families, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to do that right now. That may be your path and may be your journey in 5 years' time. You could potentially right now go travel for the next 5 or 6 years and you'd still be young as fuck. Like at 35, 36, you could still come back and then start worrying about what it is you want to do. Just because people say that you should do one thing doesn't mean you have to. As I said, when you live in accordance with others, you'll never be happy. When you live in accordance with your own nature, you'll always be happy. And in this case, your nature is the choices and your internal compass of what it is that you want to do. So what I would advise is combine that. Use the 97-year-old rule, go to the future and ask yourself, what would you regret more, if I didn't travel or if I settled down right now? And then combine that with realizing that whatever choice you make, you could do both. You could settle right now and then in 5, 6, 7, 8 years, potentially go traveling with your family. Or you could go traveling now and come back in 5, 6 years, settle down and start living the life that you want, because your internal compass is going to be directed in a different direction. I know this is someone that my life changed 3 years ago when my daughter was born. I didn't want to go traveling anymore, or I wanted to go traveling, but I wanted to be able to bring her with me when she was older and have all those experiences where it was the two of us, or I'd bring my mum or whoever it is that was the most important to me in my life at that moment in time. That changed because my circumstances changes, but that was in accordance with my nature. I didn't make that decision based off what society said I should do. And as a result, I felt better about the decision because I was able to use the 97-year-old rule and go, well, what would I regret more? And I was able to look back and go, well, I would regret being gone for 6 months if I had a daughter here. It's obviously a ridiculous. It was never going to be something I would ever do. But you make those decisions based off that 97-year-old rule. So I would advise whatever decision it is that you're trying to make right now, ask yourself first, what would you regret more? And then ask yourself second, can you do both? If you can do A and B, and that's an actual real choice, and you're tied between both, then do A and B. If you have a choice and you can do both, always do both. So hopefully that helps. And regardless of the context of anybody listening to this, you know, I'm aware that the traveling is just one area this is applied. Some people are going to find that this relates to their job, where they're not happy with what they're doing, or their lifestyle choices, or their relationships, or whatever way it shows up. One of the things I talked about in my book in the mindset section was, it's more important to have your ladder and be at against the right wall, and to be at the bottom of the ladder against the right wall, than to be halfway up the ladder against the wrong wall. And when you make a lot of your decisions off, is my ladder against the right wall, and you start climbing it, a lot more clarity comes as a result, and then a compound effect kicks in where you're making choices based off what it is that you truly want, based off what's in your nature, based off what you know internally and with your internal compass is right, and you're not letting other people make those choices, and you're not letting societal pressures dictate the choices that you make in your own life. Okay, next question comes in from Instagram. Do you think it's better to follow logical reasoning or go with your heart when making big decisions? So the reason I wanted to answer this question is because it kind of ties in a little bit with the last one, and my next question that comes after this is logical reasoning, where you're very conscious of the decision you're making and going with your heart, which is your gut feeling. And it's something that I've struggled with myself because by nature and by personality trait, I would be very, very impulsive. And it's something I've worked on a lot over the last 3, 4, 5 years, because I would constantly make decisions and I would say yes to things, or I would say no to things, and then I would regret my decision instantly. One of the things that has supported me a lot is my default for most things right now is no, because I know that it's a lot easier to say no to something and then go back later and change it than to say yes and commit and then understand that, oh shit, now I've got to try and get out of that when you realize it's something you really don't want to do. So my default is normally no for most things. It's why I'm a lot harder to get in the last 18 months for most things, because I'm aware that when you say yes and you go off your gut feeling, which hasn't served me massively in the past in a lot of areas of my life, and making impulsive decisions has never really been something that's really systematically helped me in achieving anything I want. And one of the ways that I've got better with following logical reasoning is reading a book by Daniel Kahneman and Eamon Tversky called Thinking Fast and Slow. I know a lot of you have listened to the podcast, some of you may be listening for the first time. I've mentioned this book regularly because it was one of those books that massively changed the way I saw the world. It took me 3 attempts to read it. So it's one of those that if you do make an attempt at reading it and you can't get through it and get the message, it took me 3 attempts. I just couldn't get what the book was trying to tell me. I didn't understand the language that was being used until my 3rd attempt of reading it. And then the 3rd time I read it, I finished it in 2 days because I couldn't put it down. And the basic concept of that book is that we run off 2 systems. Our system 1 is our impulsive automatic thought system. So Daniel Kahneman and Tversky were psychologists that understood that people made impulsive decisions off this system 1. So our automatic thought when something happened. And a lot of us, and I've spoke about, particularly in that podcast episode, about our stories, the 5 stories you tell yourself, that our automatic thoughts can be very, very powerful. And that system 1 on when I would make a good call on a person or a place or a thing or a circumstance, it made me realize that that system 1 is massively flawed. And understanding evolutionary psychology and how we've been hardwired over thousands and thousands of years to make that snap judgment, because that kept you alive thousands of years ago. If there was something rustling in the bushes and you ran instantly without even thinking and made an instant judgment call where you just automatically reacted, if it was a saber-toothed tiger, you were able to run away and save yourself. Whereas the people that didn't have that were eaten by somebody higher on the food chain and as a result didn't pass on their genes. And we are basically just a byproduct of thousands of years of evolution of people who have passed on their genes. And we still have a 10,000-year-old brain that's flawed. And that system one thinking served you in the savannah thousands of years ago because it probably kept you alive and was a reason that you were able to pass on your genes to the next generation of kids or people in your family. Whereas now, understanding that our system two, which is our thought and logical reasoning part of our brain, has evolved over the last 2,000 years, 3,000 years, 4,000 years, particularly our prefrontal cortex, the part of our brain that is hardwired to overthink, the part of our brain that can allow us to see things in the future. It's why a lot of us deal with anxious states where we're constantly thinking about what could potentially go wrong, or we're able to see things in the future. It's one of the reasons that we're probably top of the food chain and why people are able to think about incredible things. You know, I'm a firm believer that if you could see it in your mind, you can hold it in your hand. And being able to see these things, the visions that we have, our third eye or our mind's eye, which is, you know, how things like the light bulb were invented by Thomas Edison, how things like airplanes where we're flying and bending pieces of metal over oceans, how the Wright brothers were able to invent that because they saw it in their mind and they could see it in their hand or feel it in their hand. And that part of our brain, that prefrontal cortex that allows us to envision things, can also put us into a massively anxious state because you're constantly worried about things that could go wrong. I spoke about this in the mindset section of my book about why your dog is happier than you. That part of their brain isn't evolved, and every time they're with you and they're wagging their tail and they're going crazy when you come in through the door is because we're higher up in the evolutionary chain that they're present with us right there. They're not worried about when you're going to go again. They're not worried about a bill that has to be paid. They're there with you and they're being fully present. And one of the things that Thinking Fast and Slow, the book, taught me was that system two is a lot more logically adapted to deal with modern life than our system one, which has been evolved for a period of time considerably longer than our prefrontal cortex has been around. So understanding that system two, that rational, pulling yourself out and being more objective when making decisions about people or about circumstances or about jobs or whatever it is, that has served me massively, being able to hijack that system one. And it still comes, because the truth is, controlling your mindset and mastering your mind is a little bit like sweeping the floor. You can sweep the floor today and it'll be clean, but if you don't do it every day, it doesn't stay clean. And that system one will kick in where I'll get a gut reaction off a person or a decision or an impulse that I want to do, and I just have to hold it, catch it, and realize that, okay, that system one, that's flawed. Take a second, don't answer yet, come back to it, sleep on it. I love the Donald Trump quote that you can always tell somebody to go fuck themselves tomorrow. And that is something that has served me in positive and negative ways, that if I want to make a decision at night, I normally sleep on it because you're way more clear in the morning and you're not as attached and you're not focusing on that system one to make the decision. That can go for telling someone to go fuck themselves. That can go for what job offer you might take. That can go for what decisions you might make in general that somebody offers you an opportunity. When you sleep on it and wake up in the morning and still realize that you want to do it or go for it, you're allowing that system two to kick in and you're making a lot more logical choice. Personally, I found the combination of 80-20 or 70-30 using logical reasoning, because you can never fully know if you're making a right choice or making a good decision, but using logical reasoning for 70-80% and then going with my gut for the last 20-30 has served me a lot. For a large part of my early 20s, I was the reverse, where I would make a decision or I would go off a good impulse, and I had a lot of fucking problems that put me into very uncomfortable situations with different people in particular, where I would make a good reaction or an impulse and then I had to get myself out of it. So I flipped that over the last 4 or 5 years, and that book by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky, Thinking Fast and Slow, has really, really helped me understand what's going on from a cognitive bias, a psychological avenue in evolutionary psychology reason for why my system one kicks in and then hijacking it so it's not making those decisions. So for me, following logical reasoning has always supported me more. But at the end of the day, I tend to go from 80 to 100% off of gut on people, on jobs, on offers, on opportunities. And personally, that has helped me a lot. So hopefully anybody that's making decisions, or if you were a young me where you were making really poor fucking choices with people or relationships or life choices in general, that hopefully that will help you hijack it. And definitely check out that book, even though it may take a couple of attempts to read, as it took me three. It really changed my way of seeing things, and made me a little bit more self-aware on why I was doing things the way that I was. So hopefully that will help and support you. And that is personally one of my favorite books, and is one that has changed the way I've seen the world dramatically over the last few years. So that's all five questions from today. So I'm officially, in the next couple of days, flying out to the Sahara Desert. So be sure to check out my Instagram. That's going where I'm going to be the most active. Anytime I get internet out in Morocco, I'm going to be going on to Instagram stories. So if you want to see how the sand dunes of the Sahara Desert look, and how I'm faring up running through 256 kilometers self-sufficient for 6 days in the Sahara, be sure to check that out. And next week's episode will be going ahead as planned. We've scheduled it. I'm literally going to record it right after this week's episode, and it will be out on Monday as normal. So there'll be no interruption on schedule. Also, for any GA players out there, I'm going to put my GA hat on for a second. Be sure to check out my GA Muscle Camp, which is my first full day GA seminar. That's going to be in the Clayton Hotel in Galway City on Saturday, the 12th of May, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., where we're covering everything for GA players on nutrition, training, sports psychology, mindset, supplements, sleep recovery to ramp up your performance to the next level. So I'm looking forward to seeing everybody there that is a GA player. Be sure to check that out on briankeenfitness.com/events, or you can just go to the website and click on the events page. It will bring it up and you can get your ticket there. So a massive thank you to everybody for listening. And I will be checking in with everybody in the Sahara next week. So be sure to go check that out, please wish me luck on Instagram, because as it gets closer, it's something that gets considerably takes up more thought in my mind. So I've been really focused on that, so hopefully it all goes well and we get through that pretty unscathed. So be sure to check that out on Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness. Massive thank you again for listening, and I will catch you all in 2 weeks time. I'll catch you all next Monday, but it'll be pre-recorded, but I'll catch you all when I'm back in 2 weeks time. Thanks for listening. Catch you all real soon.